Good to be with you this morning and to enjoy this particular weekend down this way. And I hope that the things we'll have to say today will be certainly in accordance with the Word of God and will be beneficial to each of us. And I want to talk this morning in this particular presentation on creating a welcoming church. When Jesus sent His disciples out, He sent them into the highways and the byways and the hedges. And He asked the disciples to compel them to come into My house that it might be full. I like the fact that you're full here this morning with chairs out, because that's what Jesus wants, is for the congregations, for the houses to be full. But that is a tall order. And when we look at what that means, it means when we go to the highways, byways, and hedges, we're going to find some folks that normally we wouldn't be in the same company with, except in a setting like this. What that means in the terms of the New Testament is when they went to the highways and the byways and the hedges, they went across town and invited the Scythians. Now, you know who the Scythians are. They're the folks that live kind of out in the boonies, and they've got weeds growing up on their property and yours, and they got two or three chariots propped up in the yard. And these are, and a fence around there, and something says no trespassing on it. You start to get the picture. Those are the Scythians. And they were to go out and invite those Scythians to come and sit with the elite aristocratic Jews who had become Christians. And there were folks that were of different sexual persuasions, and they came. And there were extortioners, and they came. And there were thieves and fornicators and all kinds of people that came. Because when the great dragnet was spread, the gospel was intended to be for all. Now, people were going to be challenged with that. To come and to be sit by Saul of Tarsus, who had arrested and played a part in the death of Christians. And I'm going to sit by him and we're going to sing, "Oh, How I Love Jesus," but I'm going to be careful he's not taking notes of who all's there, because I don't trust him. That early church was a motley crew. And as time has passed on, we look about in our congregations today, and I have to ask the question, are we seeing the mixture of the cultures and the things that are in our community? Does this congregation, any congregation of God's people, does it look like the community in which it is? You see, because that's what outreach is about, is inviting those that are all about us, regardless of their situation in life. Now, that's important. Not only to raise our young people in the church and to teach them God's ways, but to reach out into the world and to invite the world to come in too. And it's a great challenge. To keep the saved saved and to help the unsaved to be saved. And to mix us all together in this hearty ragu, if you would, of people who are trying to serve the Lord together. You see, the Lord looks upon the hearts. I was over in Columbus, Ohio, and there was a young couple that insisted that I stay in their rental that particular weekend. And as we got to know each other a little bit, they told me their story. They said, "You know, we didn't grow up in any church." Fact is, and they told me the horrible stories of their childhood. And I asked, "Well, how did you come to be Christians?" And here was their story. They said, "We were out in a bar together. We used to drink all the time together in the bar. And the bars were pretty rowdy, and usually the night would end with somebody getting in a fight. And one night we looked at each other and we said, 'Have you had enough of this?' And they said yes to each other." That was a Saturday night. On Sunday, they thought, "Well, we need to go find a church." And they happened to come in. Well, happened is not the right word. They came into the Lord's church. And when they did, they saw something that was interesting there. They said, you know, the people there seemed like they were people just like we were. We went in thinking we may not be welcome here. You know, we've lived pretty rough lives. And we were thinking that maybe we'd be the folks that would need to kind of sit toward the back and kind of slip in and slip out. But they received a very hearty welcome, and today that man's a deacon. That story can be told over and over and over again, but sometimes with a different ending. And so this lesson this morning is about what can we do as Christians to create a welcoming church? When we have folks that, as I said in the class, I'm an addictions counselor and a social worker as well as a gospel preacher. And when we see people that come out of rehab centers, does the church afford them a welcoming environment? If you would, people with special needs who've been in a different spot in life and are trying to crawl out of this miry hole, a pit, and they're struggling, and they need something. And does the church have that? Has God provided that? Well, I want to suggest to you, if we are believers in the all-sufficiency of the church, then the answer to the question, has God provided a place where people can heal from their sin? The answer is a resounding yes. The church is all-sufficient. But the question becomes, how do we enable the church in its all-sufficiency? And that's what I want to talk with you about for a few moments this morning. First thing I want to suggest, has anybody ever walked into a congregation and been white-eyed? You know what I mean by that? I walked into one congregation and there's a whole bunch of folks in the vestibule. They didn't know me. I didn't know them. I was just in a different town. And I didn't know them. And I walked in, and as soon as I walked in, I got white-eyed. All the men back there just kind of turned and looked at me like, and you could almost read, like, well, who's that? What's he doing here? And I'll tell you, if I hadn't realized my need to worship that morning, I might have been a little afraid to take the second step heading toward the auditorium. But anyway, one fellow finally shook my hand and said, what brings you here? And I told him, and I didn't tell him my name. I'll get to that in just a moment. But so I walked in. I gave him my first name. And walked in, went in, sat down, and I worshiped with him. And when I left, nobody was speaking to me. Until someone said, now, what was your name? And I said, Art Adams. Oh, are you one of the Adamses? Usually if your last name's Adams, you're one of the Adamses. And I'll tell you what, you may as well have turned a light on, because all kinds of folks, oh, well, that's Connie Adams' nephew. That's Wally Adams' son. He's related to, and you know, kind of go down the pedigree of the 9 or 10 of us that are out doing this work. And I got to thinking, that's a horrible response. Because until I was judged to be somebody, I was nobody, and I wasn't particularly feeling real welcome. So what I want to suggest to us is some simple things this morning on how to create a welcoming church. The first thing I want to say is, don't give me a holy kiss. I don't accept kiss. Well, sometimes I do. But in Romans 16, 15 and 16, Paul writes, salute one another with a holy kiss. The churches of Christ salute you. And my question is, for this congregation, I know some of you, most of you I don't, and so I just speak generically this morning, but do we salute people when they come in? Do we break off in our little groups and all that, and the visitors weave out past us, or do we welcome? And you have to answer that, because I don't know many of you. But do we afford a generous welcome to those that come in amongst us? And I would just ask the question, what does it take to be a member here? I was in one congregation and folks said, well, you know, you'll need to be here for a couple of years before the folks get used to you. And it's like, that's a lot of services. but is that what it takes? What does it take to be a member? But more so, what did it take for that phone to ring where I call and say, what time are your services? What did it take for a stranger to walk up to this door and to open that door and decide to come in? You see, there's a process before they get in, before people get in the building. What does it take? And people come from the highways, byways, and hedges. Sometimes they come from a fuss the night before. Sometimes they come from a, I'm leaving you. And someone decides to come back to service or to come to services. There are times we have downturns in our life. There's times there's great things that happen. Don't mean to be all negative. But something happened before that person walked up to that door. And what caused them to come to that door at that point in time to go whatever out of their way was to be here? And what happened once they got through the door? You see, that's what having a welcoming church is about, is feeling like I am accepted, I belong, you're glad I'm here, I feel warm in this group. Now, Paul talked about the church, and I just have to ask the question, because we have really messed up on this thing. We say, I'm going to church, like it's an infinitive. I would challenge anyone to stand up and show me and church for me. So let's just stand up and church together. You see, we have taken a word that is a noun and we made it into an infinitive. We made it a destination instead of a process. To say I'm going to worship would be accurate. That's what I'm going to do. To say I'm going to be with the brothers and sisters, that would be accurate. That's what we're going to do. To say I'm going to fellowship with God and His people, that's accurate. But to say I'm going to church, how do you do that? So what I want to challenge you is to reframe, if you're using that statement, to kind of challenge yourself on that statement. Because the church is not a destination. The church is not something happens in four walls. The church is us. Whether we are in these walls or whether we are distributed out in the community, the church is still, there's still a church in this community, even though there aren't services at all times. So we are the called out. Well, what does that mean? That means that we are called out of the world to take the message that calls others out of the world so they can be changed. This past week, I was talking with a lady who was having some issues, a member of the church, and we were talking about the mission of the church. And she looked at me funny, and we kind of got around, and I realized she didn't know what the mission of the church is. And she'd been in the church 30-something years and didn't know what the mission of the church was. And she and her husband were leaders in that congregation. It's like, oh my. And so when I talked about evangelism and edification and limited benevolence, it almost seemed that those were new concepts to her. And I'll tell you how she was visioning the church is a bunch of fuss budgets. A bunch of people that are getting on each other's nerves, and at the end of a service they can't wait to get out of their car and they worship God instead of as a fellowship of God's people. They worship God as silos by members and then head out to the car. Well, I have felt this morning that this is not that kind of group. So I don't have to scold you for that. But I tell you, there are folks like that, and you want to work where you never, ever become like that. That we go out in the highways, the byways, and the hedges. Well, in this lesson, let's see what the early church did. In 1 Corinthians 6, verse 9 through 10, there were a list of people that had come out of the world. They had been scraped up off the streets, if you would. They were the extortioners. They were the drunkards. They were the fornicators. They were the immoral people. And these folks, Paul says, and such were some of you. But you were washed and sanctified and cleansed. And so there had been a transition take place in their life. Now, here's what I want to talk about this morning. What does that transition look like? When I come out of a drug rehab center as a client, and I have been taught the 12 steps, and the first three are very spiritual in nature, that I take a look at myself, and ultimately, by that third step, I'm trying to find God as I understood Him. And I'm trying to reconnect and get my life back together. Do we have an atmosphere in the church where we're not just a worship society, but we're a helping society? Do we have people that if you call them at 2 o'clock in the morning and say, listen, I am having the hardest time because, see, 2 o'clock used to be my using time. I'm not in recovery. I'm using this, using first person in a different way. But that's not my recovery, or that was my using time. And now I am having cravings to where it took all I could to pick up the phone and call you, brother, sister, Christian. Can you help me? Would you come and sit with me? And what would the answer be? You see, because a church that is a welcoming church has help around the clock. And sometimes that means that I get inconvenienced by maybe losing sleep or having to wake up to go and to help someone that is in need. Are we that kind of people? And that is what the called out is really about. Having a network where we can get help. Now that's reciprocal because we're not doing all the taking, we're also doing the giving. And that means that there are times that I need people's help and there's times that they need mine. Here's an issue. The issue is many folks are willing to give help, but not many folks are willing to receive the help. Sometimes people suffer in silence when they need to speak up and talk. They need to say, hey, listen, I'm hurting. I need you all to pray with me and for me. But sometimes, well, I don't want to bother them. And others need it more than I do. And we excuse our way out of really being that welcoming church where we're helping each other. Well, 1 Corinthians 6, these people were called out of the world. Jesus said in John 4, verse 35, that look on the fields, they're white unto harvest. But the laborers are few. Now, I work kind of with people that have lots and lots of issues. And I spend days with them. And more often than not lately, it's been members of the church that will come distances to see me. And what I've come to realize is that there are hurting people in our pews. There are people who need our help. They need to ask for it, but we need to be willing and ready to extend help to whatever degree we're able to. But there are also folks out in the world like that. And what Jesus said is, the fields are white to harvest. I hear a lot of folks say, well, you know, churches aren't growing like they used to. Well, guess what? We're not sowing the seed like we used to. The fields are white to harvest. But the issue, Jesus said, is the laborers are few. Now, I think in the class this morning that last Monday night I was sitting with a bunch of heroin addicts who were high. And trying to help them to get to a point of sustained recovery. And what I noted with them is one gentleman was there, and he said, I've been 30 years on the other end of a needle. And he said, and I asked him, I said, well, why are you here tonight? And he said, because this gentleman stopped and asked me how he could help me. The next statement was painful. He said, no one's ever asked me that. What that meant was a world that judged him. People that looked down upon him. And he brought that on himself. I'm not trying to make him Lily White here. But no one asked me. Jesus passed through a pool in John the 5th chapter. And it was a motley crew. It was a bunch of sick people waiting for the waters to be stirred. And there, Jesus asked the man a question. Would you be made whole? You know, in a lot of contexts, we might say, that sounds like a dumb question. You're out here sitting by a pool waiting to rush down there. Would you be made whole? But you know, we have to ask that question of all of ourselves and others. Would you be whole? Would you, or are you comfortable in the lifestyle where you are? You see, being a Christian is about change. And it's about going out in the highways and the byways. It's about leaving the comforts of our home. It's about inviting people in. It's about going places. Jesus said that people were like sheep without a shepherd. In Revelation 22 and verse 17, what it says is, "And the Spirit and the Bride say, Come." Now, I know what the Spirit is. The Spirit's the Holy Spirit. But who's the Bride? That's us. That's us. And we are to say, "Come and let us drink of the water of life freely." We are to invite people to come and be a part with us in this great work of the Lord. So when the call was issued, who came? Those that were weak and heavy laden came to find rest. Those that were poor and those that were rich came into the assemblies, James 2. The chief of sinners came to church. No, he didn't. He came to worship. There, I did it. All right, he came to worship. Those that were racially and culturally mixed, as the Samaritan woman, they came. And as Titus. The elite came, as in Nicodemus and Joseph of Arimathea and Saul of Tarsus. The Jews came. The gospel was to them first, but also to the Gentiles. Those who had been sifted like wheat came. And even though Satan had had them in their grasp, this man who had been sifted like wheat was able to stand up on the day of Pentecost and have the recorded lesson of that they had crucified the Son of God. The truth is, he had been there and he had denied the Son of God. That's how Satan sifted him. You see, we're not meant to stay where we are called. We are meant to grow and develop and to, when we are in our moments of weakness, when we get through those, we are meant to get up and get on with it. The publicans and the sinners came. The fellow came out of a sycamore tree. He came. Publicans and sinners, those whose sins are many, they came. This passage that our brother read for us in the beginning about the lady who came in off the streets. And everybody knew her. She had a reputation to have around town. And I tell you, it took a lot for that lady to come in to that particular group. Now, that group judged her. That group were looking at her like, "What is she doing here?" But she came anyway. And she came up to Jesus and she was crying. And she washed His feet with the tears. And she anointed Him. And Jesus knew, too, that her sins were many. And He said, "Your sins that are many are forgiven you." You know how many folks left there with their sins forgiven? One. You know who that was? The least likely one. Yes. Jesus is the friend of sinners. There are folks out there that need that word of encouragement, that need that help that we can offer. Even the feeble-minded were invited to come. And here's the passage you can read. You see, the blood of Jesus cleanses us not just from some sins, not just from the nice sins, but the blood of Jesus cleanses us from all sins. Isaiah 53, the passage there talks about how God laid on Jesus the iniquity of us all. He didn't hold back. He didn't say, "Well, let me pick and sort through what sins I'll forgive." He chose to forgive all sins. So what are some of the obstacles that keep a church from being a welcoming church? One that I would start with is one who has the spirit of Diotrephes. You know, the whole world would be a better place if they would just do what I want them to do. I say that facetiously. Because I personally think that it's a very unnatural thing for people to get along with each other. I think we have to work with that. Because each of us thinks that we have the bright idea. The brightest idea, usually. And what that means is that we have to do a series of negotiation and kind of tuck and pull to come to conclusions. And I don't always get my way. And sometimes my way is not always a good way or even the best way. But Diotrephes thought his was. And it was going to be his way or else. And those are things that will help shut a congregation down. That prodigal son, do you know the story of the prodigal son is not so much about the prodigal son as it is about the prodigal son's brother. The Pharisees who considered themselves righteous. That's when Jesus told the story. And here's this other brother out in the field, and he's not going to come up to the house. My brother, you know the story of the prodigal, and he came back. And I'm not coming back up to the house. This my brother who spent his life out with harlots, that he's come back, and lo, these many years I've served you, and you never... Or I never did anything wrong, basically. Really? Really? Well, you know, when we are faithful for periods of time in the church or for a lifetime, and we're faithful in the church, sometimes we have to do a check on ourselves. Am I that self-righteous elder brother? And do I resent it when people who have been out kicking up their heels in the world, when they come back or when they initially come in, we have to do some checks on ourselves then. That older brother had a problem. Obstacles within church, people shaming and guilting, judging folks. And we have to be careful, very careful of that. So if we had a person walked into the congregation, we had one of these up where I preach in Plymouth, and we had a brother walked in, and he looked pretty scruffy, and a lot of the ladies were afraid of him, and they said, "Did you talk to him? Did he come for a handout?" No, he didn't. He's one of our faithful members today. And you know what? He had come to town. He was a truck driver. He had come to town to find a place to live. And he didn't look like a lot of the rest of us. But he came, and he's a faithful member of the church from another place. And the first response was, "We are afraid of him." Well, he does pretty good. In fact, he's preaching for me this morning up in Plymouth. Now, when people come into the highways and the byways, come in from the highways and byways, we need an environment that is conducive to healing. And I've done a lot of thinking on this as to why people who are in rehab, people who are in recovery from porn addictions, in recovery from betrayal, from life, from depression, you name it. Why do we have to go to the world to find support? Those support groups are all out there. You can find them through United Way or call 211 and you'll find out where those support groups are in the vicinity around you. I read James 5 and verse 16 and 17. It says, "Confess your faults one to another and pray one for another. The effectual fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much." And I read that, and what that's talking about is transparency among Christians. That I don't come acting like everything's okay. I don't have my Sunday smile on. But instead, what I have is folks want to know how you're doing. Now, they don't need the whole neurotic litany. But if someone says, "How are you doing?" the answer's not fine all the time, is it? Sometimes I'm hurting. Sometimes I need prayers. And that's the kind of transparency I'm talking about, where we say, "You know, I'm struggling right now." And then the response would be, "Well, how about we spend some time together?" You know, you ask somebody, "What do you need?" They probably don't know what they need. If they knew what they needed, they would have done it. So, why don't we spend some time together? What are you doing this evening? Or whatever. There are some congregations that even have discussion groups, aside from their regular service times, that have started this on various topics. There is a group just north of me, a large conservative congregation up there. They've got several of the men that have been caught in porn addictions. And you know, the secrets of addiction is, as long as you keep it secret, it will continue to grow. You've got to be able to share and get help with that, because your best thinking keeps you sick. And so we need people to talk with. And there are members of the church that are willing to be open with that. Another congregation in northern Kentucky that has done the same thing. They've got an issue. And what they're doing is those that want to talk about it come together and talk about it. And they support and help each other. And they've even got some apps on their phone to where if one of them needs to hit the button and say, I need some help now, they do that. And they're in that close touch when each can bear his brother's pain or sorrow and help them to get through that. That's what Christianity is about. It's not about leaving ourselves alone, stranded, to face the world or to go to the world for our help. We've done that way too long. So the things that keep from this, if I need to share that I have a particular problem, whatever it is, fill in the blank with anything. But what would be the response if I shared that? And would I be talked about? Would people slander, go behind my back and say, well, you better watch out for him? You know, what would they say about me? Or would they have that welcoming, you know, okay, you've acknowledged you have a problem, and we want to help you with that. What would be the response? See, bitterness can also set in terms as a barrier, and we can find ourselves in great issues because we have become bitter toward life, bitter because the help we thought we were going to get, we didn't get there. And so we kind of settle into a complacency. There's a man in your Bible that we call him Barnabas, but that wasn't his name. His name was Joseph. Acts chapter 4. So how did he get a name like Barnabas? Well, it was a nickname. And he was nicknamed by the apostles. Now, I wonder if the apostles were to go through any group of the Lord's people on a Sunday or a service time, and they were to say, well, let's identify you by character. We're going to rename you by characteristic. Would they have Sister Happy and Sister Cheerful and Visitor and all that? Or would they have, well, Brother Grumpy and Mr. Grouch? And what would they have if they went through? If your name, the characteristic, your dominant characteristic, how you are identified amongst this group, what would your nickname be? Now, if you don't like that nickname, then you need to work to see if you can kind of change your presence somehow. But what would your nickname be? His name was Barnabas, encourager. And everywhere you see this man, he is an encourager. From endorsing Paul to come into the Jerusalem church, to the missionary journeys, to encouraging John Mark, a young man that started out and then hesitated and created a rift between Paul and Barnabas. And Barnabas took his side in that, even though it caused a strong contention among him and Paul. But he stuck with Mark. And later on, it turns out that Barnabas had done a good thing, because later Paul, who had said, he's not coming with us, said, send him to me. He's good to me for the ministry. This young man who had stumbled and fallen, he got back up because Uncle Barnabas helped him. An encourager. And then when we get to Galatians 1, what we see is a statement that almost is an astounding one, where Paul talks about a dissimulation, a prejudice that was obvious, and Paul says, insomuch that even Barnabas, you know what that tells me? That was so out of character for him. This isn't the way that guy acted. I would not have known him, because that's not the way he does. You see, his characteristic was a congruent one. That everywhere you went, you felt better after you talked to Barnabas. He shook your hand and you felt like going out there and conquering the world as a Christian. Because this man was an encourager. But one time we're told he got caught up in this. I want to ask you something. Now, why do you suppose that in three chapters of the book of Acts, the same story is told? Acts chapter 9, Acts 22, Acts 26. They're all about the conversion of Saul of Tarsus. You mean, Luke, that in 28 chapters you couldn't have found more material to write about than to tell the same story three times? Of course he could. And that's inspiration of God. But why was the story there three times? There's a little different details that give us a deeper picture. But why is it there three times? And I'll tell you what I've concluded. People need to tell their story. I don't know at what point in the Lord's church that we became so against testimonials. And I'm not saying that we need to stand up and shout and holler and give and tell lies. I'm not saying that at all. But there is strength in telling your story. Sister Tammy came to service up where I was preaching. And she'd come out of some rough stuff. She'd been a biker babe. And she had a rough lifestyle that went with that. Bad childhood, a lot of things. And Tammy kept coming forward. About every service she'd come to the front and ask for prayers. And not every service, at least once a week. And finally, after she did that one night, she stayed over and she said, "I need to talk to you, Art." She says, "I'm not coming back." I said, "Well, why not, Tammy?" And she said, "Because I'm the only sinner here. And I'm making the rest of you look bad." I'm like, oh no. I knew Tammy's story. She had told it to me. But also knew there was another sister in the congregation who had almost the identical story. She had been a biker babe too. How ironic. But you wouldn't ever known it. She never told it. I knew it. So I went to her and I approached her and I said, "You know, Sister Tammy needs your help. You know, she's thinking she's all out there alone and you guys have gone down a similar path. Can you help her? Can you get with her and talk with her and kind of coach her along a little bit?" And this sister looked me square in the eye and said, "Absolutely not." And it threw me for a moment, and I finally asked, "Why? Why not?" And she said, "I don't want anybody to know that part of my life. That is a sealed deal. I don't even ever want to open that again." I talked with her a little bit and used the passage, the three chapters in Acts. I used that as an illustration to her. The end of that story, fast forward, is that she did go and talk with Tammy. And she and Tammy became the best friends. They helped each other. But the power of that story is both of them grew. They both grew. I am firmly convinced that the things I've been through in life and the things you've been through in life, we didn't go through those to keep those to ourselves. We know how to walk on those paths, however bright or dark they are. We know how to walk those paths. But guess what? Somebody's behind us on the same path. Someone who one day will be a powerful force in the church is back there struggling. And my story can help them. And your story can help them. And we have to be transparent with each other. I'm not saying get up and go tell all your business. We have to be discreet. But sometimes we're too discreet. And our story can help. Who knows better how to deal with someone that's been in the highways and the byways than someone who's been in the highways and byways? Across this nation, 1 in 4 of the females, by the time they reach 18, has been sexually assaulted. 1 out of 5 males by the age of 18. And if we were to count off in fours, even though that proportion may not be true for this group, it would be somewhat true. And when we have people that, whose lives have been hit by trauma and they're trying to deal with it and cope with it, and in the darkness those things come back to them and they live with that, but they don't ever seek help. They don't ever say, "Would you pray with me?" You know what? There's others here like that too. One of the big things I see with the porn addictions that are around the country is Satan is killing our men in our congregations because he's picking them off one at a time and they're not talking to each other. They're not getting help from each other or the Lord because they are so stuck in their guilt, shame, and secrecy. And we have to talk to each other. If we're trying to get over something, our best thinking keeps us stuck. And we need the thinking and the help of others who can pull us out of some of these messes that we're in. The word hospitality means affording strangers a generous welcome. In 1 John, we find another kind of confession. This is a one-on-one. This is something between me and God. I do something I shouldn't have, and I want to talk to God about it, and we get that straight, the two of us. Or it may be there's a couple of other folks I need to make some amends with, and we get that thing straight. That's more of a, that word in 1 John, confess your faults, is a word about private sin. But the one in James 5:16 is about openly stating what's going on with us and seeking help. Now I want to say this, that when we seek help, we need to feel like the folks we're seeking it from are able to help us. And that's where we got to do our homework. And we have to be ready and willing to help folks. Well, Paul told his story three times, and Paul didn't tell that to glory in his past. But he told it because his story could help other people to make changes like he did. Fact is, they're doing that even today, aren't they? As we talk about his life and his stories, and Paul still makes an impact, though he has been deceased for years. A welcoming church is a rejoicing church, a weeping church, an uplifting church, a peaceful church, a loving church, and a refreshing church. We need refreshing Christians who, when we're with them, that hope is restored, that help is felt, that we realize that they don't see us as a burden, but as an opportunity. We are a group of beggars who are asking others to show us where the help is. And there are those just like us who also are in that receiving state. So here's what I want you to know from this lesson. That every church of the Lord needs to be a welcoming church. The people that look like they least want your help are the folks that probably need it more than anybody else. They may have that wall around them that you don't know quite whether to approach them or not. And here's what I would say. Ask the question. Ask the question. Like that 30-so-year heroin addict. And he said, I'm here tonight because you asked me. 30 years and no one asked me how I'm doing. I was in a forum a few weeks ago. And there was a lady telling her story. She's a member of the church. And she was telling her story. And a statement that still haunts me. She said, the loneliest place on earth for me is in church. She would come to services hurting, and she would leave hurting. But here's the point that she finally got. She didn't have to. She didn't have to. And I hope this is the kind of church, and I believe it is, that will reach out and help each other. Not judge each other. Oh, we get enough of that from the world. But a church that reaches out and says, welcome. You're in the right place. We're glad you're here. And oh no, we're not the perfects. We don't go to church because we're perfect. We go to worship because we're sinners. May God bless us to have His church being a welcome center for sinners and not a wall that keeps them out. That's our lesson this morning. I hope it's one that sings hard in our hearts. Oh, the suffering humanity. And the God of heaven looked down and said, they need a Savior. And we still do. If you are one that needs to acknowledge something this morning, I would ask you to come to the front that we may pray with you. Maybe you're just struggling. Maybe you haven't committed a particular sin, but you're just struggling in some way. And you need folks to pray with you. This group's wanting to do that, right? Willing and wanting to do that. And maybe it's something that you've had trouble, you've done your best to deal with it, and you just can't quite get it taken care of. And you need to say, I need your help, folks. This is a time. This is an invitation. It's not met so we just sing a song. It's met so we can respond. And I'm going to ask you to do something that's going to challenge each one of us. If there's something heavy on your heart, you can leave it here. And you can walk out that door free. And so the question is, will you come to the Lord while we stand and sing?